Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I am Lee Cantor, and I am joined in the studio with my co-host, Mr. Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
I am doing well, man. Getting excited about this show. We got a lot going on too. There's a ton of stuff happening with us.
I know a lot of action. What's some of the stuff we got going on?
Well, this afternoon after Bernie buys me lunch, we're going to continue moving the studio into Rome, Atlanta. And so we've got that embedded studio going on, and we're going to have a lot of new entrepreneurial-focused shows out there.
And when's the first show?
The first show is going to be Dr. Tim's Right Here, Right Now, Tuesday at 10 o'clock.
And so then they should tune in for that. And also we're doing a big kind of soiree, right?
Yes, September 7th in the evening, we're going to take our remote unit out there, and we're going to have a big party, and we're going to interview a bunch of folks. And then is it the following week? I'm headed to the UK to talk about putting some studios up there.
That's right. And you got to meet the consulate people.
That was fun.
Right.
Those guys are great. And then the week after that, we're going to be setting up at 200 Peachtree. So things are just rocking and rolling,
yes,
man.
A lot of activity. But we got a great show here today.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. I've really been looking forward to this show because we have an encore performance. We have a repeat guest. Please join me in welcoming from Ogilvy Public Relations Worldwide, Robin Cobb and Jacob Hawkins. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Robin, you're our veteran. Tell us a little bit about what you're up to and what is Ogilvy Public Relations Worldwide all about?
Well, Ogilvy Public Relations Worldwide is a large company. I'm working in the 360 Digital Influence Group, running that for the South. And so we help companies deploy social media in a way that brings value to them and helps them engage and build community around whether it be a service or a product or just to help them extend their reach. And I'm going to let Jacob talk about.
Do you find 360 degrees is enough?
You know, sometimes it is, but we actually think and that we're...
Sometimes 720?
Well,
you got to go around twice.
So we say that we bring the right 10 degrees to each project, so there I appreciate you asking me that. And I'm going to let... Jacob's on the traditional side, so I'm going to let him talk about...
He's old school. Okay. You know what that means?
He's old school.
Just
he's
a
paper.
Little, just a little. Yeah, and typewriters. Now, Ogilvy Public Relations is one of the largest public relations agencies in the world, about 60 offices, a little bit more worldwide. Been here in Atlanta for many years. I do a lot of consumer work here. You know, we've got one of the larger 360 digital influence teams, I think, in the network here in Atlanta. So doing well there. You know, we focus on, as Robin mentioned, really, building brands and growing value for all of our clients. So I got some exciting work coming and definitely growing here in the market.
Now, how do you kind of transition your clients from the old school press release PR kind of mode to the new social media? Like, how do you kind of
he
make
doesn't
that?
He holds on to them, right?
You do both. Hey, you guys got to work together, right?
Well, they're equally valuable. Sure. I think we have a lot of clients that come in that want the social media experience and want to be in the digital space, but also haven't really played in the traditional public relations arena. So it's almost a two-parter. Every client is different, and we have to educate them on how social media is part of traditional media relations and vice versa. It all ties in together, and it's all equally important.
But how do you do that initial conversation? Like, you meet your client, you kind of assess their needs, and then you're like, you know what, maybe you have some sort of a mix with some traditional and some social. How does that happen?
Let Robin take that.
So at Ogilvy, we think it's important that the clients build an integrated approach and the right mix of owned, earned, and paid media.
Okay.
And so
she said that before. That just like rolled off of her tongue.
You're going to write that down.
Owned,
we
earned,
can use
and
that.
I'm going to use that in my noon meeting.
So that's where we come together. A lot of times we have the conversations together. We listen to what the client wants to achieve, and then what we do is we go back and plan a model that works for them and helps them get to that. And it's quite often a blend of not just public relations and social media, but we integrate with our other Ogilvy partners as well.
Uh-huh.
Now, do you find that clients or prospective clients are equally clueless about social media and traditional, or do they typically have a little better handle on one or the other coming in?
You know, I think every client is different. Every client brings its own history. You know, a lot of clients, you know, with the exception of startups that are completely new in the arena, have dabbled in traditional public relations, traditional advertising and marketing. Social media is definitely, I mean, that's the hot button thing. And, you know, it really is. It just depends on the client. and again, as Robin said, we try to get that integrated approach down, try to explain kind of exactly what their needs are, where they've been before, and what we need to do to unravel their story and how we get it out there.
And I think, too, that I don't know that they're clueless, but people have an expectation of social media.
Right.
And we're not in a world anymore where social media is the shiny new thing. It's expected. And so what we see is that consumers and business targets are looking on Facebook before they actually go to the internet. So what we try to do is help coach these clients to find the right model and the right mix and to build that content cadence that will keep people coming back.
And it's certainly not a one-size-fits-all strategy.
Now, do you believe that every business should have a Facebook page?
We don't.
No.
We do not. So we believe...
Do you believe every business should have a radio show?
We absolutely do. We absolutely do.
Nicely done.
So what we do is we work hard with companies to help them build what we call the right social brand architecture.
Uh-huh.
And so there, if you have topics that you shouldn't be talking about or aren't that interesting, but you have photos and other things like that, then we might help you build a different type of mix.
Right.
And all, we try to get companies out of that channel mindset and to think about communications. Who are you trying to reach? How are you trying to reach them? What's going to resonate with that audience? And then coach them along that path.
Now, when you're doing the coaching, how is it from a, like I could imagine some of these older companies that have been around for a while that are having a difficult time letting the consumer kind of have a voice in their brand? And then, you know, when you're on social media, the consumer's kind of driving a lot of this. How do you kind of coach them to become more comfortable with having the consumer out there?
That's a great question. So what we believe that all the conversations are good ones.
Okay.
And so we work hard with companies to find the right mix. We often may create a model where the complaints and the service requests we might direct to Twitter.
Right.
Or direct to another tab on the Facebook wall so that they're not hanging there with that negative piece. Quite oftentimes what we find with consumers is if we respond to their concern in a way that's meaningful and we can, even if we can't resolve everything, but we acknowledge that we've heard them and we're going to work to improve on that, that's enough. And then we can turn those people into loyalists. If we're building the right kind of community, we also see models where the members of the community will respond before the brand can actually respond.
Right.
So it takes a little bit of bravery.
It does,
but
doesn't it?
It does. But once you see that it works, the company see that it works, they embrace it, and they become a little bit more less resistant to it. And they, when we move those negative comments to a different model, if you will, people will, you know, they're not lingering out there. It gives them a little bit more peace, if you will.
Right.
I teased you about it a few minutes ago, but I wish you'd speak to this owned, earned, paid thing a little bit. Walk us through that and help us get a handle on how you would capitalize on that in an integrated strategy.
Do you want to?
I think you can take a...
Come on, Jacob.
No,
come on.
Step up, Jacob.
I can give you an example. So we worked, it's out there now. So we worked last summer with Ford to launch the Ford Explorer. And if you recall, we launched it on Facebook. And Ford is a longtime old Ogilvy client. They're a great, loyal client. They're willing to take the risks. So
and
we
they found Ogilvy on Facebook initially 100 years ago.
You know, I think they did. I think they did.
It was a tweet by David Ogilvy.
Right.
They got Henry Ford over.
So they've been a longtime customer, and they're a great partner, and they're willing to, you know, move forward there. So what if you look back, wish I had the case study with me, but if you look back, it was a integrated model of us creating content for Facebook. Uh-huh. There was some PR. We were on the Today Show after we made the announcement on Facebook. So we actually announced on Facebook first what the new Ford Explorer was going to look like. We took comments there. We had the earned media with the Today Show and things like that, and then we had a lot of paid advertising. So it was that right mix of media that's not just owned by us but also paid, and then as well, and then we got that earned us a lot of media and people commenting and things like that, and stories came from that. So that's the ideal mix. We don't think that anybody should only be social media. We really believe in that integrated approach, and we do live it at Ogilvy.
Well, it sounds to me like social media can really grease the skids. Your stuff, Robin, sounds to me like it can really grease the skids for your stuff, Jacob. Or does it work both ways, too, in your experience?
You know, I think it does work both ways. You know, in the traditional public relations, media relations side, whatever content, whatever stories that we can generate With traditional media like USA Today or the Today Show, as Robin mentioned, for the Ford case study, or for the Ford project, they definitely do. That is content for all of our social media properties. You know, the same way, whenever we launch social media properties or a new project, or we're rolling something out again for the Ford, it was for the Ford Explorer, it was rolled out on Facebook. So that gave us a traditional media story to take to some of the big industry publications, right, like Ad Age and Brand Week and some of the other ones. So it definitely is a cross-population. Content is king, and it just it feeds it feeds each other. So it's
so once you get a good story in a reputable venue, or maybe even less than reputable venue, I don't know, that helps you get the next one, right? Success begets success on this stuff. Yeah?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, sort of another example that just actually came up yesterday. One of our clients is Maggie Moo's Ice Cream and Treatery.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So we do a lot of QSR work with them, and had a story place in Food and Wine. And one of the things that Maggie Moo's has done is they've introduced this ice cream pizza. So it's basically a base of vanilla ice cream. I want to say like red velvet ice cream as the sauce, and then they put different toppings on the top. Well, anyway, it was featured yesterday on foodandwine.com as part of this top 10 interesting things brands are doing with ice cream. So that came through yesterday, posted, and we immediately got it up on Facebook and Twitter. So you know, it definitely it feeds each other.
But
so.
Did you have anything to do with that, or was that just
with the Food and Wine?
Yeah.
Yeah, we placed it.
Okay, so you placed it there, and then from that, then that kind
it
of
was all Jacob. Without Jacob, the whole opera falls apart. I'm telling you.
And your objective though is for the consumer to kind of be hit by these messages
in multiple places, multiple touch points.
It seems like everywhere they turn around, then they're seeing it.
Absolutely.
So how do you shop, though, for PR? Take someone like Lee, who just doesn't know the first thing about PR, right? Absolutely clueless. What kinds of questions should he be asking? What kind of criteria should he be evaluating potential PR partners against? We don't buy PR. How do you shop for that effectively?
You know, I think there's a couple things. You've got to come in and talk to them about what their process is. You've got to figure out how they get their tactics and how they get their approach and how they get their overall programming. So you want to talk to them about research. You want to talk to them about, you know, what the team is going to look like. You know, as Robin mentioned with Ford, you want to ask them what other relevant work that relates to your brand they've done and kind of see how they've executed that. And I think you also want to make sure that on the back end, once everything is said and done, that they've got the metrics and the measurement in place to really demonstrate value to you. So, you know, there's really some key things that you talk to them about, but most public relations agencies will come in. I know we do with every new business opportunity that we have, with an established process and exactly how we work and what we're going to give you in our relationship. So
go ahead.
I just was going to say we're not just about the messages at Ogilvy. One of the things that I absolutely love is that research and measurement are critical. So one of the things that we would say to Lee when we sat down with him is, what are your goals? How will you measure that success? And then we would create the criteria for that. I have one account right now where we actually measure 66 things just related to their social media.
Wow.
So we are super serious, not just about the creative side and about the messages, but we're super serious about the measuring and making sure that we're delivering that value
right
as well.
Now, initially, like in the social media aspect, a lot of people are like, I want to have followers, or I want to have likes, or right, I want to have whatever. Is that really the best metric, or is that one of the 66 metrics that you utilize?
So it can be. It can be. So if the customer is looking to build community and they need a big following for right what it is they want to do, then we would measure that. We always coach people to go for quality
right
and not quantity. So if you have 10 influencers who can reach 10,000 people, but you have 9,000 followers and you can only reach 8 people,
right,
it might not be the right mix.
So how do you define that mix? What an influencer?
Well, it varies, but we were looking for people who have their own community and have a reach beyond themselves. Mm-hmm. When we go to look at influence, we're not always looking for bloggers. We may look at somebody's Twitter following and then also how engaged they are. Are they creating conversations?
Right.
Not just are people tweeting at them, but are they responding back? Are they seeding the right kinds of messages and things like that? So it would depend. I don't mean to be
but everything's different. It's how everybody has
right. Lee, you're an influencer. Maybe you could be a professional influencer. Like people could pay you to influence others. You got all these radio shows all over town.
I don't know.
But you are an influencer. And Lee, you and I have used LinkedIn before
right
to connect people together and things like that. And it's nice to see those, like for you and I, it was nice to see that come together.
Right.
But also it's nice to see brands be able to do that and have their stories told and reach folks. We're about to throw a party in New York for one of our wine customers where it's basically this relationship we built with this influencer who had an idea about an event for Fashion Week. And they did all the heavy lifting. They presented us a great story that we could tell to our client. We told the client they were in like that. Now what's going to happen is it's going to be a win-win for everybody because
So Ogilvy's out there looking for those kind of relationships?
We look for those relationships for our customers but we also look for ourselves. So on my team, everybody has a personal development plan and a personal brand plan because we believe that it's important for us not to just talk the talk, but to walk the walk.
And your personal development plan included getting in good with the wine people.
You know what? I have to tell you, I have been very...
Good work if you can get it, right, Jacob?
It's great work.
She's good at it.
We have great clients at Ogilvy. I feel very, very blessed.
That's good stuff. Now, how do you see this stuff evolving? Like, it's more social media? Do you think, are we saturated now? Do you think people are getting burned out of all this? Or do you think it's just going to be more and more?
So in my opinion, I think we've just passed the early adoption curve. So those of us who are early adopters are probably in maintenance and a little bit weary.
Right.
But there are a lot of brands who are just dipping their toes in it. There are a lot of people who are just getting their Facebook pages. It's kind of like the internet, you know, where it had that adoption curve. So I think we're moving into full adoption. But I think we're also moving into a place, like I mentioned earlier, where people are looking at at Facebook and Twitter before they look at the website. People expect information to come in a different feed.
Well, I know now, personally, if there's like breaking news, I'll go to Twitter first.
Because you get better information.
I'll get faster information updated more frequently than if I just take a shot at a news organization that may or may not have covered it yet.
And I'll tell you, just from the traditional media side, social media is playing a huge, huge part there as well. You know, you just mentioned that you go to Twitter to get your news. Well, I follow a ton of news organizations, and that's how they're getting their news out now because it's quicker for them while they're putting together their fuller story just to throw it out in 140 characters.
Right.
And one of Twitter's biggest wins this year, I'm actually on a team at Ogilvy that studies Twitter. We're called the Twitter Ninjas.
I haven't heard that phrase before.
And
they don't tell you everything over there on that side of the shop.
They don't. Right. I wish I had a ninja title. I want to be a ninja.
I didn't earn it. But anyway, but one of their biggest days was when the news about Osama bin Laden was broken over Twitter. Mm-hmm. And then the news organizations were forced to come forward with that before Obama came on because it was already out there. And it all came from a guy who was friends with somebody, you know, who had gotten the information, and he was credible, and he shared that. So it was a really big day for them in terms of news breaking and things like that. And I think we're going to see more of that going forward.
Right, definitely, because it's the most nimble.
It is. Nimble's a word we like at Ogilvy, by the way.
Okay.
So what's a reasonable budget from a percentage standpoint that a business should really consider setting aside for their PR effort? Are there some rules of thumb for that kind of thing?
That's a good question.
You hear that, Lee? That was a good question.
That was a good question.
Are we keeping score?
Yes, we are. It's one to nothing.
Actually, I think it's two to one, but anyway.
I didn't realize Robin was
keeping
nimble. Track. Wow,
how many
okay.
points do you get for nimble?
Five.
There. I'm winning.
So I don't think that there is a I would be hesitant to put a percentage on it.
100?
Absolutely. 100 does work.
Yeah, 100 works well.
In a hypothetical world.
So we can put a percentage.
I think one of the things that Ogilvy does really, really well is work with clients to really work within their budget and to prioritize what their immediate needs are and what needs we might be able to address next year or the year after and how the budget might be able to grow with that and really what we work with what they currently have. We don't necessarily go in with budgets that are out of control when we know a client, that's not what the client wants.
Right.
So, you know, I think before, you know, getting back to your question about what you should think about before you meet with an agency or what you should think about, that should be, you know, what am I willing to spend? What should my budget be? And what are my needs? You know, is it really in line with what my budget is? So, You know, I think come in with an idea of what you want to spend and what you want to get out of it, and have that conversation openly and honestly with the agency. And you know, the agency will tell you if that's feasible under what, you know, the agency's cost structure is, and how many people will be needed to staff it, and what sort of deliverables and tangibles we need to get executed. So, you know, I don't think there's you know, I'm going to have 10% of my $500K marketing budget dedicated to PR. I mean, that's fine to come in with, but you need, if you have that number, then you need to really know what you want for it and not just expect what you would get for 20 times that budget. It's an open and honest conversation to have with the agencies you're looking at.
Now, do you find that a lot of people are now shifting some of their advertising dollars over to PR?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's definitely a fluid transition. And I mean, I think different companies do that as a matter of course, you know, shift money here and there different years, depending on what they've got coming out or what their news is and what their goals are. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I think social media has been a huge part of that as well. As that becomes the new frontier and the number one way that brands are really interacting with consumers on a one-to-one way. I think that certainly had a big part to do with it.
So we work a lot with our advertising partners, especially mm-hmm. the digital advertising
right.
partners, to make sure that we can catch what they're placing.
Sure.
And things like that. And also, as we start to see social media, especially Facebook, moving towards that lead gen model.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, it's not fully there yet, but we do see instances where it's working, and I think it's coming quick. So we do partner a lot with advertising, but we may see them shift their traditional dollars to digital dollars and then work to build up that community
right.
and have a model where we're driving folks.
And what client is the sweet spot for you guys? What kind of, like you mentioned Maggie Moves and you mentioned Ford. I mean, those are two terribly right. different
So
groups.
We have a huge variety of clients.
Right.
So on the social side here in Atlanta, I would say our biggest customers are B2B, believe it or not.
Uh-huh.
We do have a few consumer accounts. But at NDI, sorry, we don't always call it 360 digital.
A lot of things to keep track of.
NDI, we actually work in community. So uh-huh. it may be that DC closes an account, but Atlanta works on it. So we truly do work in that kind of community
right.
across that network. I would say that we have an equal mix, believe it or not, of B2B and B2C
right.
customers. On the PR side, I'll let Jacob speak to that.
I mean, you know, honestly, there's a lot of parallels between the way 360 Digital works and the way traditional Ogilvy PR works. We do have a lot of cross-office collaboration. Here in Atlanta, we do a lot of consumer work. In the past, I've been with Ogilvy here about 5 years. In the past, we've done a lot of healthcare work. Done a lot of corporate work. You know, the types of clients we work with, honestly, are it evolves. It evolves
right.
with the economy. It evolves with the Atlanta market. So really, we work with a lot of consumer clients here, but it's very fluid. We also work with some corporate clients.
Does the path to a client typically go from I have a need for a project and they engage you on a project and then it kind of expands over time when they see all your capabilities?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it something that every year they're bidding out their marketing/PR?
You know, it can start as a project, and certainly we do have clients that relationships have started that way. Ogilvy, I think, traditionally has been a relationship-driven agency.
Right.
We do projects. We do them well. And typically they do grow into larger relationships, annual or multi-year. But most of our clients and agents or clients are the result of an RFP process or something where we've been through planning stages with them. We know it's an annual type of
right.
arrangement. So,
is that the same in digital?
It is a little bit. We also, Jacob was right. We have some folks who have some great relationships. So it may be that somebody's out and says, "Hey, we're thinking about this for social media,"
right?
And then one of our leaders will say, "Hey, you should reach out to Robin and her team," and then we'll go in and do a meeting. Sometimes we even do we may take on a smaller project so that we can cast a vision for them for
right.
the goodness that they can get from social and PR.
They call her the closer, Robin the Crowder.
You know what? That is my ultimate goal in life. I love that show. If I could solve crimes, I would be doing that tomorrow.
Well, you've got the Southern accent. You got the whole package, girl.
It's so funny you brought that up. I love that show, but I digress.
What's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you guys and have a substantive conversation about taking on some PR effort?
Sure. I mean, you know, the easiest way, I think you can go to www.ogilvypr.com. Or Robin will probably give her direct phone number out. If you...
So you can reach us in a variety of ways, but I'm on Twitter under Rockin' Robin C, and you can reach out to me that way. You can also reach us at Ogilvy. My name's Robin Cobb, so it's robyn.cobb@ogilvy.com. We also have a blog. You can reach out to us. So we're there. We'd love to chat with anyone who wants to talk about PR or social media at any time.
Well, thank you both, Jacob and Robin, for being on the show. Can you hang out with us for a little while we visit with our next guest?
Oh, we'd love to.
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Well, next up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce a lady with Hometown Health, Miss Brooke Fritz. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. So tell us a little bit about Hometown Health. I understand that you are working an awareness campaign. Tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Hometown Health is an organization that is really, really focused on the survival of rural hospitals in the state of Georgia. We have 56 member hospitals at this time, a pretty good saturation of the state. And to define a rural hospital, it's not going to be your Grady Hospital or Piedmont or any of the ones that we're familiar with here in Atlanta. As a native of a really tiny little South Georgia town called Thomasville, it would be a hospital in one of those kind of areas.
I know Thomasville. I hit Thomasville after I've been to Striplings on the way down to my brother in Tallahassee.
So you know about the beef jerky at Striplings,
don't you?
Absolutely. Okay, so Hometown Health is one of eight partners that is involved in this particular grant. We lovingly refer to it as the BTOP grant, but for those of you who don't know what BTOP means, it is the Broadband Technology Opportunities Program. And that is basically to make more underserved parts of the state more aware of broadband technology and how it can affect their lives, you know, individually. Over 40% of the impoverished communities under $20,000 income levels do not have access to any sort of broadband or internet technology.
Wow, I didn't know the numbers were still that high.
Serious.
They're very high. So this particular grant has been pushed really thoroughly through Georgia Partnership for Telehealth. They're based in Waycross. I was actually there yesterday. And so Paula Guy really pushed this and got all these partners together. There's a kind of a group of private companies, community organizations, all kind of pushing together to get this off the ground. And we're about a year in to the overall grant program. There's over $3 million that's been dedicated to the full, you know, execution of this grant. My job is to tell the world about it in wonderful forums like this. And I'm really excited to be the one that's in charge of telling everybody about it. I'm planning to go, there's kind of a two-pronged approach. One side is to tell kind of the parents and the children in these rural areas. It's over 130,000 children that they're targeting in 91 counties. Georgia's got, I think, close to 100 and something. I don't know the total, but 91 is a bunch of them.
Oh yeah, that's a big percentage.
So I'm not understanding how broadband helps people's health.
We're gonna get there.
Okay.
We're gonna get there.
I always read the last chapter first, and when I read.
Come on, Lee, you got to work with me here. So Hometown Health is one of these eight companies. We have Morehouse School of Medicine is involved. We have the Atlanta Community Service Association of Community Service Boards. There's several, and I do not know them off the top of my head right this very second. I'm sure they're going to kill me for that part. But we are all getting together to make this work. Somebody, you know, one company is doing the database of all the physicians that we're going to be making aware, because there's free training for the physicians as well to learn how to make this all work. So I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. Lee, you kind of threw me off.
Sorry, I didn't know we were
going. That's his job. That's what he does. That's what Lee does.
I'm like, hold on. I'm not sure if any of you have heard of, telemedicine?
Yes, I have.
You know how, let's say, you know, you have a specific condition that cannot be treated here in your specific hospital. They can utilize telemedicine to get a physician in England or Seattle or wherever to be able to help you. And I like to lovingly refer to it when I'm out networking as Skype for doctors. kind of thing.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
It's basically utilizing the broadband. There we go, Lee. The broadband.
There's your connection.
Nicely done.
Yes, technology. It's almost like, you know, like a computer screen. There's a cart that's involved, and it's got little, like, attachments, kind of like a vacuum cleaner, a little bit. You know, there's like a derm attachment to look at your skin. There's a Bluetooth in the stethoscope for them to listen to your heart. They can look down
How
your throat.
How cool is that?
Yeah, and the doctor is not with you. He can be anywhere else. And so the biggest thing is there's a bigger initiative here for electronic health records. So that's even a bigger tie-in how all this works together. But so basically, this telemedicine can be implemented via the broadband technology over these networks through the fiber and all that loveliness that we don't all know about. We just think Verizon 4G, 3G. I just do this and it happens, kind of thing. This is all the basically the framework of all that happening. So,
so I can be in Op, Alabama, and I got some Swedish doctor consulting me because he is the ultimate authority in short, fat rednecks. And
that is certainly possible. Right. That is definitely possible.
That is cool.
So
is this initiative trying to get out this pieces of equipment to rural areas, and then you have the doctors in central areas, and then they're communicating with the people in the rural areas? Is that a part of the initiative?
That is a pretty good summation of it, in the sense that, yes, these rural areas do not have access. If you know, Miss Jones and her child, he's got autism, and he can't get to Emory because they just can't get there financially or otherwise. You know, if there's a physician in their area that is participating in this program, they can take him to that physician, turn on the machines, and get him connected to the one that he needs.
To the expert.
Correct.
Right.
So that's where Hometown Health also comes into play on the physician side, because we have Hometown Health University, which provides all of the online training to the physicians so that they can get, you know, connected in and know what they're doing.
Now, are you looking for more physicians to engage in this program, like in the metro area, so that it can...
Yes.
So that's one of your
goals? That is definitely one of the goals. We are currently doing some several different marketing initiatives, including social media, to speak to Robin and Jacob's part. Actually, Peachy is the mascot for this program. And
is that really you? Do you put on the costume yourself? Or
you
what?
Know, it's actually coming to my house today. I can try it. I'll send
Stone
you a picture.
Can be persuaded to wear that costume.
I actually need some Peachy volunteers. So Jacob, Stone, Lee, Robin, any of you that want to come along with me, I will be going all over the state with Peachy into these school systems. I actually presented to a group of superintendents yesterday. I had 7 in one spot, so that was good. Yeah. And they're all very receptive to this. From a school perspective, some of these children, the only health care that they receive is at school. They get to go see the nurse, and that's really it. And so a lot of these underprivileged areas, this is something that would significantly benefit your average parent and your average, you know, child that doesn't have access to better health care. So we're looking at increased health care outcomes, got a decrease in absenteeism, which I know at the superintendent level is a significant concern. So I really feel super passionate about this. Everybody has given me kind of the jokes about becoming Peachy, but I have to be the one that's doing all the talking, shocker. So I have to have somebody else with me, but we're really excited about it. And Peachy has his own Facebook page that I created.
And
Peachy has
a
Twitter.
Is it a guy or a girl, Peachy?
Well, I've been talking about it like it's a guy, but he's kind of androgynous looking, so I'm not really sure.
So
go ahead.
Is it facebook.com/Peachy?
It's Peachy Teleconnect. GA, because Peachy by itself, I think, was taken.
Okay. I just wanted to know how we could connect to
absolutely, it. Absolutely, for sure. And he is a super happy guy, and he'll be talking about that he was here with me this morning. Wink, wink.
Yes, I see him there. He's waving. He's waving.
You mentioned that the educators, the superintendents, the school system seems to be all over this, and they're really embracing it. What about the doctors in the facilities in the rural areas? Are they embracing this, or are they a little bit resistant to it? Or how is that part of the effort going for you?
I'm glad that you asked that question, because I actually spoke with some of the superintendents yesterday. There is a balance that you have to strike between not alienating your local physicians while also pushing, you know, off onto a physician that's far, far away. So there definitely is a significant balance that has to be struck just right to make sure that your local physician knows that he or she is helping impact their community. They're increasing the health outcomes of their of their populations by doing this, that it's not, you know, hey, we're picking so-and-so over you or anything like that. And overall, the response has been absolutely stunning from my perspective watching it. As soon as you see an example of someone actually doing it, because I've been where they've done the cart and the person sitting there and you can look down their throat or in their ear or wherever, and you see how, I mean, it's super duper duper high definition. You know, it's just one of the coolest things I've ever seen. So that's why I'm here and love it and so excited y'all let me talk about it.
Now, how will you know success when you see it? What will success look like for this thing?
There actually is an evaluation component to this grant. The grant goes on through next year. My marketing awareness component is pretty much going to be handled through this fall, a little bit into the beginning of next year. The Lieutenant Governor's Office is actually extremely supportive with us. Irene Munn has been super duper supportive. Jimmy Lewis, our fearless leader, is always up on the hill with the legislators, trying to make sure that the rural hospitals stay at the forefront of their conversations, where, you know, from a funding perspective, etc. For evaluating purposes, I would think that there are some numbers. You know, we have to get to 130,000 kids in these 91 counties, and there's some of those kind of quantitative pieces that will be used to evaluate. But I think the bigger picture is, you know, who's going to know about, you know, for lack of a better way to explain it, you know, Peachy, he's going to be out in the communities talking to everybody. And, you know, we've already got, you know, I think 47 Facebook fans in 2 days, you know, which that's good for me, I think, you know.
We'll share it across our network.
Thank you, Robin. That would be super wonderful.
Oh, that's really cool, you guys.
Yes, absolutely. Because, you know, I need as many people to know about him on the front end as possible, so that if I go talk to a physician and he goes, oh, I've already heard a little bit about this, right, you know, that kind of thing. So at the bigger picture level, I think the evaluation is just going to come from if we can actually get these kids some better health care. I think that
would
be.
Well, it's an underserved market. I mean, that's an important initiative.
Absolutely.
So how can we help? What's your biggest challenge, and how can our listeners and the folks in this room help? What can we do for you, you think?
I think the biggest boost for us would be some cross-referencing between websites. I'm doing a lot of digital stuff that's going to take everybody to the website, which, am I allowed to say that right
Absolutely.
Now?
Absolutely. Okay. Right. Go for it.
The website
if
is...
If we let Robin do it.
It'll be itemized on your bill. Don't
Absolutely.
Worry about it.
I don't know if we really have to say the W's anymore, but, you know, www.teleconnect, teleconnect.com.
And then from there, you can get to everything else.
Absolutely. You'll good. Get to one of us.
Then we promise we will link to you. It'll all be
That's
good.
That's the best way.
And if you shoot me a picture of Peachy, we'll even put him on the post.
Wow. That would make my day. Yeah,
you
thank
got
you.
It.
All right. Well, this wraps up another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. We will see you all next week.